Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. That President Donald Trump wants to pull U.S. forces out of Syria is not news. He, like many Americans, many analysts, has long criticized the U.S. getting tangled up in endless wars. But his sudden announcement that he'd pulled back some of the American forces along Syria's border with Turkey to make way for a Turkish incursion, well, that caught everyone flat-footed. His generals, Kurdish allies, European allies, even regional adversaries, and even his allies in the GOP. Then came the tweet where the president claimed that in his, quote, great and unmatched wisdom, he would destroy the Turkish economy if Ankara did anything, quote, off limits. What does that mean? This hour on Point, the president makes way for Turkey in Syria, and what could come next? You could join us. Do you support the president in his desire to get the U.S. out of endless wars? How do you think he handled this decision? Is the U.S. abandoning Kurdish allies who've been instrumental in fighting ISIS in Syria? And what does this do to U.S. reliability on the international stage? Well, in just a couple of minutes, we will check in with a reporter in the Turkish capital of Ankara. But let's start in the U.S. capital in Washington. Missy Ryan covers national security for The Washington Post, and she joins us now. Missy, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
So first of all, let me just read you a couple of tweets that the president sent out from yesterday and then just today as well. Of course, there was the tweet yesterday where the president said, just to reiterate, if Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, consider off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate the economy of Turkey as I've done before, end quote. That was yesterday. Today, the president tweets, we may be in the process of leaving Syria, but in no way have we abandoned the Kurds, who are a special people and wonderful fighters. Likewise, our relationship with Turkey, a NATO and trading partner, has been very good. So, Missy, what exactly is the president's Syria policy right now?
Well, this is another instance of President Trump upending American policy on Syria and then seemingly moderating his stance somewhat after he comes under criticism, this time from members of his own party, for his expressing his desire again to leave Syria and get U.S. forces out of Syria. And in this instance, it's all tied up with Turkey's opposition to the longstanding military partnership with Syrian Kurdish forces. And so what President Trump has done, starting with a White House statement that was issued late on Sunday and then a series of tweets yesterday and today, has been to announce that American forces would be pulled back from positions along the Syria-Turkish border, where they have been located for several months in an attempt to avert a Turkish military operation into Syria against these Syrian Kurdish forces that have been a really important partner for the Pentagon in the fight against the Islamic State.
Mm-hmm. Well, the president has been determined for quite some time to reduce the U.S. presence in Syria. As we recall, it's what prompted former Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis to resign and usher and sped up the departure of the special envoy to the coalition that's fighting ISIS, Brett McGurk, as well. But I'm wondering, right now, Missy, how is the Pentagon handling this moment and all the sort of uncertainty with exactly what the president's intentions are? Because I understand yesterday the Pentagon was trying to contain the damage, announcing that, quote, we do not endorse a Turkish operation in northern Syria.
Right. Well, this is, again, another instance of the bureaucracy scrambling to catch up with the president. And in this case, what was surprising wasn't so much that Turkey was finally making good on its promise to launch this military operation against the Kurds. It was the timing and the way in which it seemed to, at a certain point, have President Trump washing his hands of the fate of the Syrian Kurdish forces, who have been an important ally. And so what the U.S. military is trying to do right now is at least present a public perception where to reconcile President Trump's position, you know, pulling back the American forces and potentially exposing this counterterrorism ally with what had been a previous attempt, as I said before, mm-hmm. to have this so-called security mechanism, which was the U.S. military partnership with Turkish forces in northern Syria, that had a specific intention of making sure that the situation that we're living right now didn't happen.
Mm. And what impact is this having among some of the president's strongest supporters in Washington? I mean, we've seen comments from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senator Lindsey Graham calling this a mistake, former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley tweeting, the Kurds were instrumental in our successful fight against ISIS in Syria. It's a big mistake to do this move.
Well, it's really interesting because you have seen pretty much unanimous condemnation among both Democrats and Republicans, with certain exceptions like Senator Rand Paul. And the problem that people are bringing up is that, number one, you know, there's a sense of loyalty to these Kurdish fighters. They've suffered more than 10,000 casualties in the years that they've been fighting alongside American forces. There's the idea that this partnership is still needed to make sure that the Islamic State doesn't come back in full force and stage another counterterrorism challenge in the Middle East. And then there's the question of are we deterring other local forces in the future from working with the U.S. military if we're seen to be abandoning them in their hour of need. But I think it's also important to remember that, you know, when the Obama administration entered this partnership with the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is the main Kurdish force, it was known at that time that at some point there was going to be a problem with Turkey, because Turkey sees these people as terrorists, as threats to their national security. So, you know, what the U.S. government has been doing for more than 4 years now is trying to finesse the tension between their counterterrorism need, as they saw it in Syria, and trying to defer to the show deference to the national security concerns of their NATO ally, Turkey. And right now it's just all erupting in an ugly way in Syria.
Mm. Well, Missy Ryan is national security reporter for The Washington Post, speaking to us from Washington. Missy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of what Turkish President Erdogan said yesterday, describing his telephone conversation with the president that prompted the current moment we're in.
Regarding this matter, after our talk in the evening on this issue, the withdrawal has started, as Trump stated. Now counterparts are carrying out their work and will continue to do so.
Turkey's President Erdogan there. Well, joining us now from Ankara, Turkey, is Dominic Evans, Reuters Turkey Bureau Chief. Dominic, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Meghna.
So you heard President Erdogan there describing the start of the pullback of U.S. forces on the Syria-Turkey border. What about on the Turkish side? Is an incursion beginning?
At the moment, it's pretty quiet on the Turkish side. We're talking about a very long stretch of border. It's about 300 miles long. But there's a specific area between two towns of Tel Abyad and Ras Al Ain where it looks like the incursion would start. On the Turkish side of the border there, it's very quiet at the moment. What we have established is that overnight, last night, Turkey carried out strikes further to the east. Excuse me, further to the east on the Syrian-Iraqi border, which it says was targeting transit routes for the Kurdish fighters. Mm. So that was a preemptive strike to prevent them reinforcing the areas of northeast Syria, which will be targeted in the incursion once the fighting actually starts.
Mm. Now, Dominic, just for clarity's sake, what is Turkey's argument for wanting or having wanted the U.S. to pull back troops from the border here? I mean, is it the claims of national security are really claims of trying to control those Kurdish fighters?
Well, I mean, there's two things here. There's what Turkey wants to do, which is to set up a zone on its border and push back the Kurdish fighters from its border, because it says, as you heard from Missy Ryan, that they are a security threat to Turkey because they are linked to guerrillas who've been fighting an insurgency inside Turkey. The difficulty is that those Kurdish fighters in Syria have been the main partners of the U.S. in the fight against Islamic State. So they are closely allied, the U.S. and the Kurdish fighters. Turkey has said for months that it intends to go ahead. It wanted to act with the United States, setting up jointly a security zone in the area, but it complained that the U.S. was dragging its feet. It was all going too slowly. And eventually, President Erdogan and President Trump spoke at the weekend. President Erdogan repeated Turkey's frustration and impatience, and that's what led President Trump to decide to pull back those troops who are actually on the border.
And Dominic, I wonder just briefly, what was the response in Turkey to the president? You heard me ask this to Missy about the president's
yes.
sort of series of tweets about having the power to destroy the Turkish economy if they get out of line.
Well, the first reaction was from the Turkish lira, which weakened because Turkish economists and bankers are obviously very concerned about the impact that the United States could have on the Turkish economy through sanctions if it chose to act against Turkey. The political reaction today, President Erdogan's spokesman made a very pointed comment about Trump's tweet. President Trump talked about his own unmatched wisdom. President Erdogan's spokesman said wisdom should be constructive and not destructive in response to those threats. There's also been reaction from some of the opposition parties. And the effect has actually been to rally Turkish opinion around the president, around sort of nationalistic sentiment. One of the opposition party leaders described President Trump's comments as insolent and said this was the time for all Turks to rally together.
Well, Dominic Evans, he is the Reuters Turkey bureau chief, speaking to us from the Turkish capital of Ankara. Dominic, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are talking about the U.S., Turkey, and Syria, and what happens next after President Trump has decided to pull back some U.S. troops from that Syria-Turkish border. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the U.S., Syria, and Turkey. And let's listen to a little bit of what President Donald Trump himself said during remarks to the press at the White House last night, where he explained more about why he wants to pull U.S. forces from Syria.
We interject ourselves into wars, and we interject ourselves into tribal wars and revolutions and all these things that are very, they're not the kind of thing that you settle the way we'd like to see it settled. It just doesn't work that way. But hopefully that'll all be very strong and strongly done.
That's the president yesterday at the White House. Well, as you've been hearing, the president's decision has been criticized by some of his strongest supporters. Here's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham speaking to Fox News. He slammed the president's decision to pull troops back from Syria's border with Turkey. And he warned Turkey that there would be consequences if it followed through on its planned incursion into Syria.
This impulsive decision by the president has undone all the gains we've made, thrown the region into further chaos. Iran is licking their chops. And if I'm an ISIS fighter, I've got a second lease on life. So to those who think ISIS has been defeated, you will soon see. And to Turkey, okay, you've destroyed the relationship, what little you had with the U.S. Congress. And I will do everything I can to sanction Turkey's military and their economy if they step one foot into Syria.
Senator Lindsey Graham on Fox News. Well, let's go to Dolores, who's calling from Waterford, Pennsylvania. Dolores, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. I have a couple comments. The first comment I have is I can't imagine how these U.S. forces feel, who have fought and worked alongside the Kurds. To me, this is like abandoning your brothers and sisters in arms. And let's not forget, there are women in this, Kurdish women, who are in this fight as well. So who is the actual conductor of U.S. foreign policy? Is it Putin? Is it Erdogan? Do we actually have a viable U.S. Security Council, or is it something on paper? I mean, I cannot imagine what is going through the minds of the generals and admirals who sit on the Joint Chiefs. If Trump follows through with this idiotic policy, the blood of the Kurds will be on the hands of guys like Lindsey Graham and other Republicans who have failed to push back against the great and unmatched wisdom of this mental midget. I hope I'm wrong.
Well,
but this could be like a mini Armenian genocide, but of course on a smaller scale. I guess Trump hotels in Istanbul are more important than Kurdish blood. My anger and disgust with this administration cannot even be measured.
Right. Well, Dolores, I'm going to get a couple of folks here to answer your question about who is conducting U.S. foreign policy, and I thank you for your call. Joining us now is Jennifer Caffarella. She's with us from Washington. She's a research director at the Institute for the Study of War, and she often briefs military units on a variety of subjects, including Syria, ISIS, and Russia. Jennifer, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
Also with us is Joshua Landis. He's joining us from Norman, Oklahoma. He's director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma and author of Syria Comment. Joshua Landis, welcome to you.
Pleasure.
So, Jennifer,
nice to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So, Jennifer, let me just first go to you. You heard Dolores express her profound disgust with this moment, but to her question about who's really controlling U.S. foreign policy in the region, how would you answer her?
Sure. Well, I'll start by saying that the president, of course, does control our foreign policy in this region. And I think the challenge that U.S. forces on the ground in Syria face right now is that the president has been relatively consistent in stating his intent to get out of this conflict. He doesn't want to be involved on the ground in Syria, and he doesn't seem to even want to have to deal with the complex negotiations involved in a withdrawal, which is why we're currently doing this somewhat by inches and on the timetable of, in this case, the Turks. I think part of what has been absent from this discussion, however, is that the U.S. forces deployed to Syria have never had a political strategy from the civilian leaders within this government for how to translate the hard-fought military gains on the ground in Syria into a durable political outcome. That problem began within the Obama administration, and it has been continued by the Trump administration, who has been even more disengaged. And that political vacuum, so to speak, in our policy has created a huge vulnerability that the Turks are now exploiting.
I mean, you could say that lacking a political plan is a hallmark of American military involvement in the Middle East since 2001.
You know, I wouldn't disagree with that, but what I would emphasize is that the political strategy here is not the responsibility of the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. The Pentagon did its job.
Mm-hmm.
This is the failure of our civilian leadership.
Yeah. Point taken. Joshua Landis, your response to what Jennifer's saying.
Well, we've consistently raised the expectations of our partners beyond what America can fulfill. We've done this in Afghanistan, where we promised secular Afghans that we would develop them a secular country and be there for them for a long time. And now we're in the process of withdrawing. In Turkey, it's been the same thing. We do need to withdraw, but we need to do it in a measured way in which we do not hurt the Kurds. Your caller was absolutely right that the Turks have a very complicated and bad relationship with the Kurds. They don't just want to push Kurdish forces away from their border. They also have a much larger social engineering project. Erdogan has said he wants to move 2 million Arab refugees from Turkey into this region. This means ethnically cleansing the Kurds. Erdogan has done this in northwestern Syria, where he has taken over a region, and we have a laboratory there to see what's happened. And tens of thousands of Kurds have been ethnically cleansed. Others have been killed. Shrines have been destroyed. The Yazidi, about 13 or 14 Yazidi shrines have been blown up. He has put Arab Islamist militias in their place, and this has been extraordinarily damaging. America cannot let this happen on its watch. It would be extraordinarily irresponsible.
Mm. Jennifer, let me just jump back to you quickly, because I do want to hear your take on this. This is a central question about the impact that the president's decision might have. I mean, as you've been hearing, many people are saying it's an abandonment of Kurdish allies to a potential bloodbath by Turkey.
Yeah, I think what Joshua has explained with respect to the social engineering is really an important aspect of what's about to unfold in northern Syria. This is not just about Kurdish fighters pulling back from the border. In fact, in the zone, they've already done that. They already dismantled their defenses, which means they're not even entirely able to fight back against this Turkish incursion because of guarantees that the United States made. And what's at stake right now is not just the military fortifications, but rather the entire social fabric of this border zone. And I think what's most stark in the president's comments is that he seems to be trying to have this both ways. He wants to prevent a Turkish bloodbath, a Turkish-caused bloodbath, and yet refrain from abandoning the Kurds. And Erdogan's position on this makes it very clear that the United States cannot have it both ways. The Kurds are willing to compromise. They already have. Erdogan is showing no such willingness.
Hmm. Well, on that point, let's go to Agit, who's calling from Verscher, Vermont. Agit, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. I fought in 2017 in Rojava in the International Freedom Battalion under the YPG, and I was in phase 4 and 5 of the Raqqa operation. And I just wanted to say that we Kurds have a long historical memory. The only independent Kurdish state to ever exist, the Republic of Mahabad, was supported by the Soviet Union in 2017 when the Kurds in Iraq voted overwhelmingly in a referendum for independence. The U.S. and its allies said no to it. And, of course, the Kurds don't forget that the U.S. Gave chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq war, which were used against the Kurds in Halabja and elsewhere. So while fighting there, I was very much of the opinion, as I still am, that U.S.-NATO imperialism is one of the pivotal issues in the region and that the U.S. only used the Kurds in an alliance of convenience. And I believe that the Kurds now have no choice but to go to Assad and Russia to provide for their security and safety, or else they will be decimated by the Turks, and who are supported by the U.S. and are, of course, a pivotal ally of NATO.
So, Agit, before I let you go, two questions. So you said you were there in northern Syria in 2017?
That's correct. I was.
Okay. So just tell us briefly, what did you see while you were there?
Of course, the Kurdish forces were backed by the U.S., so we saw U.S. planes, U.S. helicopters. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had the Marines behind us in our Raqqa Phase 5 operation, you know, with heavy artillery. And, I saw some horrible things, too, the use of banned weapons, including white phosphorus that was used in Raqqa. It was very disconcerting because many of us who went as international fighters went because of political convictions, whether they be socialist, communist, anarchist, you know, because the Kurds say that they're fighting for democratic confederalism using Murray Bookchin and sort of Abdullah Öcalan synthesis. So we saw a lot of really negative things, and we felt that in the fight against ISIS, a lot of war crimes were committed, a lot of just a lot of bad things on the ground. And we felt that the U.S. was simply using all of its power and military might to get its objectives done and to get out and to sell us out again.
Okay. And so, Agit, then how do you read this moment now? I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding if you're critical or not of what the president has decided to do.
This moment for me, and I think for other Hevals or comrades, was preordained from the beginning. It was destined from the beginning because the U.S., as I've illustrated before, was never really interested in safeguarding the Kurds. It really was just using us for defeating ISIS, for gaining that publicity of having defeated the caliphate and, you know, destroying Raqqa, and then saying, okay, now we'll let Turkey, an ally in NATO, take care of their security, you know, issues, which is, of course, the PKK and their internal security situation, of which, of course, the Kurds in Syria are a portion of that. So, I mean, I can't be critical in that this was a writing on the wall. We knew this was going to happen.
Okay, so Agit, I've been asking you a lot of questions, but I really appreciate your perspective. One more thing, though. I mean, you say it's an inevitability, but you've been hearing some of the president's closest allies in Washington really rail against this decision. We played a piece of tape a couple of minutes ago of Senator Lindsey Graham saying that he would slam Turkey with all sorts of sanctions if they begin any kind of incursion into into northern Syria. Does that give you any does that change your view of this moment?
I think first and foremost that a lot of the people who are voicing criticism are part of that old neocon war hawk crowd that really want to carve up Syria and use the area under the control of the Kurdish forces in Rojava to use it as part of a geopolitical peace in the war against Iran, Hezbollah, Assad, to kind of have another foothold there. So I don't think that it's actually, they don't care about the Kurds. They care really about that territory, the oil that it possesses, the geostrategic importance that it has. And I don't think that it ever was about us, the Kurds. Right. It's really about a foothold in Syria and carving it up because Russia, of course, has bases in Latakia and elsewhere. It's really about, power politics on a much larger scale. And the Kurds are just suffering as a result.
Agit, thank you so much for your call and for your perspective. Joshua Landis, Agit brought us a lot here. What do you think about what he has to say?
Well, Agit is right. He's right in many of his observations because the United States needs to – let me just quote to you the commander-in-chief of the Syrian Democratic Armed Forces. This is the Kurdish leader of the militia there that's helped the United States so much, said, "We are considering a partnership with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad with the aim of fighting Turkish forces." This is what the choice is left for the Kurds of the region, is to team up with Syrian President Assad in order to keep the Turks from coming in. And the United States is not letting the Syrian Kurds do this because they want to fight, hurt Iran and Russia. They're, in a sense, sitting at the southern border of this big Kurdish region, not allowing the Assad troops to come in and defend against the Turks, while they're, in a sense, they're holding the Kurds down to be raped by the Turkish army. And the Kurds are not at liberty, in a sense, to defend themselves by asking the Syrian army to come back up and engage in larger negotiations with Russia and the Syrian government so that the Syrian army would defend that border. America doesn't want that because it would, in a sense, strengthen Iran and Russia. And so the Kurds are getting the worst of all worlds here. They aren't allowed to make an alliance with Assad and Russia, and yet they're being handed over to the Turks, who have very bad designs for them. And this underlines the point made by your caller, which is America is not thinking about the Kurds. It's thinking about its own geostrategic interests, which is to deny this region of oil, agriculture, water to both the Assad government and it's unclear what the game is for, because President Trump has upended the strategy both for the Kurds and for the U.S. strategic concerns. So everybody is scrambling, and right now there's a scramble for northeastern Syria. Kurdish forces are there. Syrian forces are lined up. Everybody's trying to see whether the United States is actually going to withdraw its troops, because everybody's going to rush in and try to get this very valuable real estate.
Jennifer Caffarelli, your thoughts on that?
Look, I would agree that it should not be a surprise that President Trump is deciding to pivot away from Syria. And I don't think it is, in fact, a surprise to our Kurdish partners. I think the Kurdish leadership on the ground in Syria has had their eyes very wide open this entire time, expecting ultimately that they will have to take control of their own fate and cut some kind of deal for their political future in Syria. However, I disagree very strongly with Joshua's characterization that it is the United States preventing or holding back that Kurdish leadership from signing a deal with the Assad regime. In reality, those Kurdish leaders have consistently chosen to prioritize their relationship with the United States, who can provide far more to our Kurdish partners, even in our limited level of current involvement, than the Assad regime can actually provide. So the Kurds would much prefer to be allied with the United States than the Bashar al-Assad regime. And furthermore, the conditions that Assad would impose on the Kurds in order to provide them military support against the Turks are amount to surrender. Assad refuses to allow them their own political autonomy in their zones and expects their full subordination to his regime. That's not a good deal. And the Kurds will consider it. They're they're offering to negotiate with the Assad regime because they don't have options. But we should be under no illusions about what kind of fate that actually would bestow upon this population. Finally, it is laughable to think that the Assad regime can meaningfully fight against the Turkish army. I think the most dangerous possible outcome of this kind of a deal between our Kurdish partners and the regime is actually not that the Syrian army repels the Turkish invasion. That's not going to happen. The question here is, how will Russia position itself? Would Russia be willing to send its mercenaries or its military police to stabilize the border in the northeast? And I expect that's the kind of contingency that the Kurdish leadership is contemplating as they face the risk that the U.S. will, in fact, conduct a complete withdrawal.
Well, we have to take a quick break. So Jennifer Caffarella and Joshua Landis, stand by. We are talking about the complex consequences of President Trump's decision to pull U.S. forces back from the Syrian border with Turkey. We will be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the U.S., Turkey, and Syria. I'm joined today by Jennifer Caffarella. She's research director at the Institute for the Study of War, and she often briefs military units on subjects including Syria, ISIS, and Russia. Joshua Landis also joins us today. He's director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma and author of Syria Comment. And Joshua, I know you wanted to respond to some things that Jennifer was saying before the break, so go ahead, and then I want to turn back to our callers.
Well, I think this this dilemma really underlines the political dilemma in the United States today between Republicans and Democrats. The problem is that the Kurds have a very bad choice to make, which is how do they're going to fit in to this region? And the United States cannot stay here and stay in northern Syria forever and guarantee them an independent nation, which is what the Kurds would like. It would be the best answer for them. But I don't believe that any president could support that for the long run, in the same way that they can't do Afghanistan for the next 100 years. We're going to have to pull out. And that leaves the Kurds with a terrible dilemma. Do they look to the government in Damascus, or do they look to the Turks to defend them? And the leadership of the Kurds have said it's better for us if we look to the Syrian government, the Russians. And the Syrian government and Russians can protect this border. They had an agreement with Turkey traditionally that Turkey was not allowed to it could go over the border for a short 6 kilometers in a hot pursuit of PKK guerrillas. But the border was respected. And the Kurds and the Assad government, as brutal as the Assad government is, have common interests. They both do not want ISIS to regroup. Mm. They both do not want Turkey. They have common enemies in both Turkey and ISIS. And that's the foundation for their collaboration. And when Assad troops withdrew from northeastern Turkey a number of years ago, they handed it over to the Kurds, not to the Islamist Arab forces or to the Turks. So there is a deal to be made. It's an unhappy deal for the Kurds. They would much prefer to have the United States. As Jennifer said, they would love the United States to stay there and support them. But there are only 2 million Kurds in Syria. They can't build a nation. They don't have an air force. If they're going to have political independence, it would require the United States remaining there for decades. Right. And that's the real dilemma for the United States. Have we overreached? Have we promised too much to people like the Afghans, the Iraqis, the Libyans, the Kurds? Do we want to continue making those promises and fulfilling them? I think that's very irresponsible, and I don't think Americans want to spend, you know, another $5 trillion in the Middle East.
Well, this Joshua, sorry to jump in there, but this gets us back to what Jennifer was saying a little while ago about the lack of a political plan here. And you're asking a similar line of questions here about what does America ultimately want. But Jennifer, Joshua also brought up a point that I want to explore in detail a little bit more with both of you, and that is ISIS. So what are the implications of this move on ISIS in Syria? I mean, this seems like could it potentially be it's the source of a lot of concern for folks that could help strengthen at least partially ISIS.
It's a great question. The impending Turkish-Kurdish war in northern Syria will inevitably benefit ISIS, which will be able to exploit the conditions of chaos to further expand its networks, but will also likely actively attempt to attack not only coalition forces that remain in Syria, but to attack the YPG and its Arab partners while they are busy trying to fight essentially a two-front war against Turkey in the north and ISIS in the south. Now, they will prioritize that war against Turkey. However, they will remain vulnerable in southeastern Syria, and we definitely need to worry about that. But what I would offer is that a deal between the YPG and the Assad regime would be a huge gift to ISIS. Assad's brutality remains the single largest driver of extremism in Syria, and Assad has no meaningful ability, actually, militarily, to fight the Islamic State. Never has. In fact, the Assad regime is unable even to secure areas in western Syria that they've seized from the Syrian opposition, which, of course, doesn't use nearly the same kind of brutal tactics that ISIS does. So there's no actor in Syria that can stabilize southeastern Syria, actually the entirety of eastern Syria, in the conditions of ISIS insurgency that we currently face, except the Syrian Democratic Forces with support from the United States.
Well, Jennifer, let me ask you, I mean, Brett McGurk, as you know, he was the he was President Trump's envoy in the fight against the Islamic State. He's been very outspoken in the past 24 hours about the president's decision. Put out this big Twitter thread yesterday. Obviously, I'm not going to read it all, but one portion of what he said is he said, Turkish entry by force into northeast Syria risks fracturing the SDF, pulling its fighters out of former ISIS strongholds, abandoning ISIS prison facilities, and making it impossible for U.S. forces to stay on the ground in small numbers with an acceptable level of risk. What do you think about that?
So I would agree with that characterization. The challenge that U.S. forces face is we have an extremely limited footprint, and we are reliant on ground supply lines into Iraqi Kurdistan that could become insecure due to the chaos that will ensue from a Turkish invasion. Managing the simultaneous problems of the instability in the north and the ISIS threat is likely going to prove too much for the current level of forces that we have in Syria. And I think this raises an important point, which is I don't personally support the decision, if it comes, to withdraw from Syria fully. I don't think we're going to be willing to actually accept the outcomes of that decision. And I think sometimes we're in denial, actually, about how bad it will get. However, the status quo is not sustainable. We are headed towards disaster in Syria, and we need a better strategy.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Emily, who's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Emily, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I had a basic observation here. I agree with a fair number of the things that I've heard both from the callers and your contributors today, but one of my observations is the fact that human rights are a global issue. It should not be the U.S. who's solely always marching in saying, we want it to be this way, our way is the best way. We're very navel-gazing as a country from a perspective of what suits us. Mm. And in addition, I think that we have an obligation to acknowledge that we have profited financially hugely from the sale of arms into these conflicts. And I think that that does bear some level of responsibility in making it better.
Emily, thank you for your call. Joshua Landis, would you like to respond to Emily?
You know, the arms flow has been a disaster for the region, and this is partly why the Syrian conflict has become so horrible. Is the Syrian government is very oppressive? There's no doubt about it. But the flow of arms that went into Syria from Saudi Arabia, from Turkey, from Qatar, from the United States, to try to overturn the Assad government. But then the U.S. got freaked out by its own partners who became extremely radical and Islamist, and it dumped them. It dumped them in favor of the Kurds because it didn't like what it had developed. And this devastation for Syria, which caused 6 million refugees to flow out of the country, trapped between an Assad government that was brutal and an opposition that was very brutal. And never was peace able to, you know, no one could win because there were two sides that escalated constantly. And that is a problem, and it's going to require that that all of the actors stop funneling arms into the Syrian battlefield, and inviting Turkey in to drive out the Kurds is only going to bring a further chapter to this bloodshed.
Well, the truth that this is a situation in which no one wins is the road that we head down in a forever war scenario, right? And that is one of the reasons why the president, as we've all noted here, has actually been rather consistent in his view of wanting to pull troops entirely out, U.S. troops entirely out of Syria. Last December, as folks might remember, he did announce a partial withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria. And here he is.
We've been fighting for a long time in Syria. I've been president for almost 2 years, and we've really stepped it up. And we have won against ISIS. We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home.
President Trump last December, and that announcement, as I mentioned before, hastened the resignation of then-Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Brett McGurk, who was the U.S. envoy in the fight against the Islamic State. McGurk spoke to CBS News' Face the Nation in January, just a month after the announcement that you heard the president made in December. And here's what McGurk had to say.
The minute you announce to the world that you're leaving, a vacuum opens up and all the other powers in the region start making different calculations. And we have to work things out in Syria with Russia, and our presence on the ground matters.
That's Brett McGurk back in January. Jennifer Caffarella, the U.S. is part of leading a coalition in Syria, right? There are dozens of countries involved here in various aspects of efforts there in Syria. How are the coalition members viewing this moment and reacting to it?
Sure, it's an important point. We do have coalition special operations forces fighting with us and with the Kurds on the ground inside of Syria. And the reaction thus far from Europe has been, from those European countries that have contributed forces, has been to condemn the decision by the president to allow this Turkish incursion. And there is some discussion over whether some of those coalition partners may be able to do more to secure the detention facilities that we've discussed, which the SDF may be unable to secure when the Turks invade, so that as a coalition, we can help to mitigate the risks that ISIS will conduct a breakout offensive from those prisons. However, I think it's important to recognize the hard reality that unless the United States is involved and in the lead, the coalition will not be able to fill the vacuum. It simply won't. We may not like that. I understand that the administration wants our allies and partners to do more. I think that's an understandable desire. However, we have to face the reality we're in, which is this is such a dangerous and complicated issue that it requires American leadership and strength.
So is this being involved and in the lead, though?
No, this is not. Right. Yeah. And so this is why I have problems with the status quo. And I think this is getting lost in the debate, which is we are in a very precarious position right now. And I think the worst thing we can do is continue to waffle and be just involved enough to have people at risk and to be accountable for what happens, but not involved enough actually to determine the outcome. It's an incredibly dangerous scenario.
Joshua Landis, I just want to get your brief response to what Jennifer's saying.
You know, Jennifer is setting us up for a forever war in Syria. There is no exit plan for her scenario. You know, the president is doing this because he's going to face the people very shortly in a campaign. And the American people do not want to spend billions of dollars in North Syria. They just don't. And he understands that. He promised them 3 years ago that he would stop these forever wars, and he hasn't done it. And that's his dilemma. And it's a dilemma for the American taxpayer who does not want to see their money. They want to have better public schools, better roads, better services. And you know, for all that we can criticize Trump, he is trying to get us out of these wars. He has managed it terribly. Mm. But as you heard Brett McGurk said, we have to talk to the Russians. We cannot be the number one power in Syria forever. And the Europeans are the ones who face the greatest dangers from this, because ISIS is likely to hurt them first. The refugees are going to go to Europe. They are involved because it's their interest. Mm. Now, America can play an important role, but it has to find a solution that does not require America being there forever. And that's going to involve the Syrian government and the Russians. Yeah. And that's what the Kurds understand, and their leaders have already said, we're prepared to go down that road and talk to them. And America has to be willing to do that as well.
I want to get one more call in here before we run out of time. Jane is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Jane, you're on the air.
Hi. I just heard this morning a little clip from 2015 of Trump acknowledging that he owns two Trump Towers in Turkey. And given the timing of the phone call and his abrupt decision to pull out the troops, I think we have to be concerned that there's a personal economic motive behind Trump choosing to do this now.
Well, Jane, thank you for your call. And in fact, we have that clip that, Jane, you're mentioning. It did take place in 2015 when then businessman Donald Trump was interviewed on Breitbart News by Steve Bannon, who, of course, went on to become the president's chief strategist in the White House for a period of time. But back in 2015, Bannon asked Trump whether Turkey is a reliable partner. And here is how Donald Trump answered.
Well, I have a little conflict of interest because I have a major, major building in Istanbul, and it's a tremendously successful job. It's called Trump Towers, two towers instead of one, not the usual one, it's two. And I've gotten into Turkey very well, and they're amazing people. They're incredible people. They have a strong leader.
That's then businessman Donald Trump in 2015. Jennifer Caffarello, we've just got about a minute to go here. I wanted to get your quick take or view about this potential conflict that the president himself a couple of years ago talked about.
Sure. I'm going to make one comment first on this notion of forever war, because I think it's important in how we manage our relationship with our NATO ally, Turkey.
Okay, we've only got a minute left, just so
yep.
you know.
Yep. With respect to my colleague, the forever war argument is a straw man. The situation on the ground in Syria, we've only been involved on the ground in Syria since 2015. There is a lot more the United States can do in a limited period of time to reorient our relationship with our NATO ally, with Turkey, inside of Syria, to find some kind of political compromise in the northeast with the Kurds. It will be hard. It will take leadership, but it is possible. And it is ridiculous to say that the United States either has to leave right now because it's politically expedient to do that, or we face a forever war.
Jennifer,
that kind of paradigm?
Yeah, with all due respect, we're running out of time, but we're on year 18 of the Afghanistan war. So is it really such a strong man? I'm dropping that question on you with like 20 seconds left.
That's fine. My point is only this is not Afghanistan. We have European support on the ground inside of Syria. And the end line here in Syria is far, far, far closer than the disaster that we currently face in Afghanistan. They're apples and oranges. And I know that's uncomfortable, but it's true.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time on that point. And Joshua Landis, let me apologize to you first on that, because I know you probably want to reply. But we'll come back to this, I'm sure, at a future date. So Joshua Landis, Director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And Jennifer Caffarella, Research Director at the Institute for the Study of War, thank you as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.